I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Once again, I am joined by the writer Greg Campbell. He's written a new book, Pot Inc., Inside Medical Marijuana, America's Most Outlaw Industry. We'll get Mr. Campbell to tell us what the book's about and how he involved himself in the debate over marijuana in the United States. In this part of the world, by that I mean Vancouver, we're pretty liberal when it comes to pot, so it'll be interesting to see what his research uncovered. Not only did he grow pot in his basement, in this book he also looks at the culture of DIY ganjapreneurialism. I hope I pronounce that right, and the history over marijuana prohibition. Greg Campbell was last on for the book he co-authored, Flawless, Inside the Largest Diamond Heist in History, which was a bestseller and a hell of a read. He's also authored Blood Diamonds and The Road to Kosovo. He's won awards for his journalism, which has appeared in many publications. This book is published by Sterling. The website for more is buygregcampbell.com. He joins me from his home in Fort Collins, Colorado. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program, Greg Campbell. Mr. Campbell, good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for having me back. Nice to speak to you again.
The same. Very good to have you on. So when we last talked over the last book, Flawless, you just started this project. Is that correct?
You know, actually, it was still something that was on the very much on the periphery of my mind when when Flawless was published, which was in 2008. We were still about a year away from the doors sort of coming off of our state-run medical marijuana laws down here in the United States. We've had a lot of states since 1996 approve marijuana use for medical purposes, and by and large, it took a long time for the momentum that we're experiencing now to gain steam. So that all sort of came crashing down in 2009, and that's when here in my state of Colorado, suddenly our medical marijuana law, which had been on the books and approved since 2000, it was suddenly newly discovered or rediscovered by historically more people than have ever paid attention to it in the past.
So what exactly was the law, that one could grow marijuana for medical use?
Yeah, each of the states that have approved medical marijuana laws they're largely the same, but there are some distinct differences, and each state citizens have the opportunity to decide what they want for themselves. And in Colorado, it's a very simple law that was written by marijuana advocates, so there was no input from law enforcement or politicians except to oppose it when it was up for a vote the first time. So basically it just says that people who qualify for marijuana usage, and they qualify by having a doctor evaluate them and see if they have one of eight conditions, and they run the gamut from very serious illnesses like cancer and AIDS down to kind of more catch-all categories such as severe pain or severe nausea. But if a doctor believes that you can benefit from marijuana for your symptoms of one of those eight illnesses, he simply signs a sheet of paper, and you're then qualified to own, possess, grow, and use marijuana in certain quantities in the privacy of your house with no fear of arrest on at least from statewide authorities.
So that's
the way it's been for forever, since 2000, for 12 years now. But like I said, very few people took advantage of the law because, I'm sure is the same case in Canada, local laws are superseded by our federal laws. And our federal law has never changed since 1970. And that makes clear that marijuana is supposedly a very dangerous, addictive drug with no medical benefit to it whatsoever. And there are penalties that run from minor to pretty severe for possession of even a gram of marijuana. So I think that was what kept a lot of people away from utilizing the law or seeing how it could be turned into a bit of a new industry here in Colorado.
Now, you dedicate the book to Cynthia Malera. Is that how you pronounce the name?
Yes.
Now, she's your cousin?
Yeah, Cynthia was my cousin, and she only entered into the book maybe three-quarters of the way through my research and through my writing. I wasn't even aware that she would become rather integral to it until I was knee-deep in the research. And part of my interest in getting involved in the medical marijuana law, registering myself as a marijuana patient here in Colorado, and experimenting with growing marijuana here in my house is because I really wanted to learn about this industry and the debate surrounding whether or not marijuana has medical benefits. I really wanted to do that sort of from a, an inside-out perspective. I wanted to grow the plants myself and see what they were like. I wanted to experience, just the difficulty of actually growing it, because one of the big debates we have here is whether or not there should be dispensaries, which are basically stores for marijuana, here in practically every community in Colorado. But more to the point, I also wanted to conduct a lot of research into the medical benefits to it. And I was pleasantly surprised to find a wealth of information. There was a whole lot of literature going back decades that showed all kinds of benefits for marijuana, including probably most notably, it's really good at easing nausea that's associated with chemotherapy treatments for cancer. And when it comes to nausea in that sense, it's not like having an upset stomach, or it's not even like having food poisoning. It is full-blown, full-body retching that can actually threaten your life because you can't keep down food. You know, many chemo patients go through a wasting process where they shed lots and lots of weight. It's difficult to keep medication down. And so it's actually a life-threatening side effect of chemotherapy is this full-blown nausea. And so I read a lot of testimony about people who were, stating that marijuana had helped them with their symptoms. But there's just a difference between literature and interviewing real-life people. So right. I wanted to find someone who had benefited from marijuana for this very purpose. And both of my parents are in the medical field. My father is a radiologist who has worked with cancer patients his whole life. So I gave him a call one day and just said, hey, Dad, have you ever heard of anyone smoking marijuana for chemotherapy in order to reduce the symptoms of nausea related to chemotherapy? And he suggested that I call my aunt, who lives in upstate New York. So I gave her a ring, and I was reminded that my aunt had cared for my cousin Cynthia for many years as she struggled with mesothelioma, which is a full-blown, full-body cancer that attacks the lining in your organs, and it's most commonly associated with asbestos exposure, but no one's 100% sure how my cousin contracted it. And regardless, she decided that she was going to attack the cancer very aggressively, and that meant pretty robust rounds of chemotherapy. And it really took a big toll on her body. She lost a lot of weight. She lost her hair. She required some blood transfusions. She went into kidney failure. There was just a whole lot of very, very serious side effects to that. And one of them was, of course, this full-blown nausea I've been describing. Mm-hmm. And now, New York is one of the states that does not have a permissive medical marijuana law. So it's something that's not even really up for conversation in New York compared to many other places in the United States. And my aunt learned about the possible benefits of marijuana through someone else in my family, who she didn't identify, but she just said that someone else in the medical field, and I've got many doctors and nurses and ENTs in my family, had recommended that if she can get her hands on some marijuana, that it might help benefit the nausea, or at least reduce it to tolerable levels. So my aunt, taking her livelihood in her hands, and risking arrest and perhaps endangering herself by dealing with people who weren't in a dispensary business, trafficking in a legal substance on the state level, she had to go to the criminal underground, or people who had connections to the criminal underground in New York, to actually get marijuana so that her daughter could get some relief. And in fact, in one occasion, she went and did the drug deal herself. And my aunt, just so you can visualize her, is about 5'2". At the time, she was 70 years old, pretty spunky woman for her age, but still, an old lady. Mm-hmm. And she took the train into New York City and stopped at Penn Station, and using cell phones to connect with her drug connection, she conducted a drug transaction on the streets of New York City, at great risk to herself. And then, went back through a gauntlet of drug-sniffing dogs and police officers in the train station, and took it back to her daughter so that she could get some relief. And she said that she never paused when thinking about the fact that it was illegal. All she really cared about was giving some relief to my cousin. And luckily, my cousin was a writer and an artist, and so she kept a journal of her time with chemotherapy. And in one of those journal entries, which was shared with me, she writes that she was extremely nauseous one day after coming back from a chemotherapy treatment. And she attempted to use the prescription drugs that were supposed to help that, and they had no effect. She couldn't keep them down long enough to take effect. So she writes that she took 3 puffs of marijuana, and the nausea disappeared completely. So it was a really kind of eye-opening experience to have had those journal entries shared with me and had this really personal story shared with me, and it kind of, you know, really rung the loudest bell in my head that the drug laws we have here in the United States, really deserve to be changed, at least to the degree that we can allow people who are suffering and who could benefit from them to actually do so.
Do you think it's a civil rights issue?
I think that it's funny you say that, because just today there is an op-ed piece in the New York Times that was written by a judge, a sitting New York City judge who hears drug cases all the time, and he is undergoing treatment for cancer, and he uses illegally gotten marijuana in order to relieve his pain and suffering. And in fact, he frames it in exactly that way, that this is an overlooked civil rights issue, which is for people who have serious debilitating pain, and they have the ability to have it relieved, at least to a variety of different degrees. But the federal government is insisting that there's no medical usage for marijuana, and therefore putting people who are suffering at great risk. They're basically prolonging their suffering, or if they decide to take it into their own hands and seek it out themselves, they're risking arrest and incarceration, loss of livelihood, in addition to the pain and suffering that they're already going through. So, I think it's been framed that way by a lot of people who I've spoke to for this book, and I got to say, it's very hard to disagree.
And how are the laws changing in your view in the long run? Do you think there will be sort of a liberalization on pot laws in the United States?
You know, it's interesting because this is an issue that our politicians have actively discouraged discussion about. President Obama holds regular Ask the President polls, where anybody can put in a question and then people get to vote on what the question is going to be that he's going to answer, and I think he picks the top 3 or 4 or however many. And regularly, whether or not he's going to, vote to or suggest decriminalizing marijuana or legalizing it outright is regularly one of the top questions. And it's also the question that he always skips over and never answers. There were a lot of people who had hope that things were going to change pretty drastically when he was elected, because one of his campaign promises was that states that pass medical marijuana laws shouldn't have any interference from our federal Drug Enforcement Administration, the federal agents, the drug agents who come in and make these sweeping, dramatic raids. But in fact, what we've seen now, three and a half years into his term, is that he's actually, the DEA has actually cracked down even further than a more conservative administration before him, from George Bush. So, from a federal level, there's no one's budging. People are, they're just not willing to have the conversation that it could be anything other than this, evil, addictive, dangerous, non-medically beneficial drug that they've portrayed it as for all these decades. However, with that said, we have more and more states here in the United States who are voting against that policy, who are voting to allow people who have serious illnesses to utilize this. Right now, there are 16 states in the U.S. plus Washington, D.C., and there are 12 other ones that are currently considering some form of legislation. And it's a momentum that I think has been building up and building up over the course of probably the last 15 to 17 years, since the mid-1990s, when California was the first state to actually go this route, and others have followed suit, and people are beginning to see that not only is society not falling apart in all of these states that have passed a permissive law like these, but that people are actually benefiting from it. There's financial benefits. There are law enforcement savings. People aren't being thrown in jail as frequently for medical marijuana, at least from a state law enforcement level, there is income, there's sales tax that's being generated from the sales, especially here in Colorado. You know, there's a lot of people being put to work. There's just a lot of various benefits. And that, of course, says nothing of the main point, which is that people who have debilitating illnesses and could actually find some relief from their symptoms are able to do so in a way that's much more dignified than my aunt having to scuttle through the alleys of New York City. So I think as people become more and more used to seeing marijuana as a mainstream substance, something that is, you know, no longer just laughed at as like a prop for a Cheech and Chong movie, that actually has some sort of medicinal benefit that, frankly, you know, is very, very much untapped. You know, since it's illegal to have or prescribe marijuana, it's extremely difficult for researchers and scientists and doctors to study it and to conduct clinical trials. There are some that exist. You know, people are doing it anyway, and so they're showing us some anecdotal evidence, you know, stuff that still needs to be kind of run through rigorous research processes. But so far, there's a lot of promise that are coming out of these sort of initial underground studies. So I think what we're going to see here is the states are going to just progressively buck up against the federal position that marijuana has no medical benefit. And at some point, we're going to have a plurality of our states are going to have passed one of these laws. And at that point, it'll be really interesting to see what the federal government actually does. It's not outside of the realm of possibility that marijuana will still be on the books as a substance that, you know, is deadly and dangerous, but it simply wouldn't be enforced because all the states disagree. Or, you know, there could be, there's a possibility that a lot of people are holding out hope, you know, people who are advocating for changes in marijuana laws are holding out hope that if President Obama wins re-election and has nothing to lose as a term-limited president, that he will then go ahead and make the bold stroke of the pen, which is well within his power, to completely legalize or decriminalize marijuana.
Now, I'm interested in how you came about to pot yourself. In you mentioned earlier that you'd registered as a marijuana patient in Colorado. I read somewhere that you'd had back pain from a flight, and so you found that it helped you. Once you registered as a patient, that gave you license, I guess, to grow marijuana. How did you get involved from there to actually selling it or getting involved in sort of the subculture of it?
Yeah, you know, it was a very interesting road. You know, if you'd asked me a couple of years ago if I would ever, you know, be a guy making arguments on the radio that we should be changing marijuana laws, I would have laughed.
Yeah.
Because prior to my interest in this topic, I was really ambiguous about marijuana. I'm not a recreational marijuana smoker. I've tried it in college. You know, I was very dedicated to trying it in college,
right,
and it just never took for me. I didn't enjoy it very much. Much preferred a cold beer over a strong joint any day. So it just fell out of my lifestyle. It wasn't part of my everyday experience. With that said, though, I've somehow managed to surround myself with people who do smoke marijuana fairly regularly and enjoy it and don't seem to suffer any terrible effects. And so at the back of my head, I kind of always knew that what we were being told by the government about marijuana was inaccurate, that, you know, it's not deadly, it's not dangerous. Yes, it's a powerful intoxicant, but compared to other legal intoxicants like alcohol and, you know, cigarettes, there's a much less chance of dying or suffering some sort of, you know, terrible calamity if you're smoking marijuana. So, but, you know, I still couldn't care really one way or the other whether it was legal or not, because, like I said, if I'm not a recreational smoker, it doesn't affect me. I am a healthy person, so I have no need to explore its medicinal value. But when, in 2009, suddenly the industry around here just exploded out of nowhere, and it was a result of a kind of a perfect storm of circumstances, but the most important was that President Obama's Justice Department had issued a memo, which I'm sure they now completely regret, basically saying that, as Obama promised in the run-up to his election, federal prosecutors should make it a low priority of arresting marijuana offenders in medical states, where, as long as they're complying with the medical marijuana laws, they should be left alone. And that didn't turn out to be true, but at the very beginning of when that memo first hit, everybody, you know, suddenly decided to get into the marijuana business, and people were opening stores left and right, and politicians were kind of running around with their head in their hands. They didn't know which way was up. So I found myself really living at ground zero for this debate that had been, you know, flaring up on and off for, you know, for the last several decades here in the United States. And it was seeming to be a bit more vociferous and a lot more mainstream than it had been, the debate and the discussion. So I thought, well, what a perfect opportunity for a book. I'll, you know, do what I usually do and dive in head first and go, you know, get myself a medical marijuana card. I'll get some plants, and I did all that and, you know, made a little grow room down in my basement, which was much more difficult than I expected it to be. You know, the law allows me to grow six plants, and so I just kept it to within the letter of the law, had six little marijuana plants, and did everything pretty well there in terms of growing. I can't even recall, just to show you that this really was a one-time experiment, I actually can't recall how long the harvest cycle is.
Yeah.
But I want to say it's about 12 weeks or so. And so for that 12 weeks, I was, you know, I was nurturing my green thumb and bringing the plants into fruition. And, you know, another part of this investigation was to see how viable of an industry it could be. You know, there were a lot of people talking about job creation and about income and how much money could be made. And so that was another one of my things I wanted to test, was to sell the marijuana to one of the local dispensaries here that, you know, sells only to medical marijuana patients. And my idea was to sort of become a wholesaler. And, you know, if it worked out, then great. I would probably enjoy doing it again and have a little cash crop growing in my basement up to this day. But unfortunately, for that particular plan, our state lawmakers changed the rules on us. And I was right at the stage where I was getting ready to harvest my marijuana when they passed a new law that said that the dispensaries themselves had to grow most of the marijuana that they sold. Mm. And little freelancers like me were just cut out of the equation. So by the time my marijuana was ready to be sold and I was looking around for buyers, most of the dispensaries had already gone to their full harvest situation, or they were shutting down to go out of business because they couldn't afford to do that. And so I resorted to selling my marijuana where everybody sells anything these days. I put an ad on Craigslist and specified that, you know, you have to be a medical marijuana patient, you have to show me your medical marijuana license and your ID and all that kind of fun stuff. And, you know, so, and that worked great. I ended up selling it to a medical marijuana patient here in my town. He bought my entire crop, which turned out to be not very much. But it was, so I closed the loop on that entire experiment. It was important for me to really see everything through from seed to sale. So it was a pretty good lesson, I guess, in how these half measures just create more problems than they're worth. I wouldn't recommend, you know, that we sell our marijuana on Craigslist, for instance. There's probably a better, more sane way to approach it. And I think that our lawmakers probably should take stuff like that in mind when they're thinking about distribution systems and, you know, whether or not they should have a knee-jerk reaction to not allow them, because not allowing it then pushes it into other fringe markets that might be less appealing.
Where is public opinion on pot? I mean, have stoner movies like Pineapple Express or shows like Weeds, has that helped, do you think?
That's a good question. Culture-wise, you know, we've come a long way. Because for me, growing up in the 1980s, the biggest deterrent from doing marijuana when I was a teenager was the Cheech and Chong movies. Mm-hmm. Because I was, you know, you watch those and it's just like, these guys are just a couple of idiots. And, you know, if that's really what marijuana makes you act like, then I really don't want to do that.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah.
There's a lot of people who, you know, marijuana advocates actually bristle sometimes at their depiction, which is not often inaccurate of what they look like in the movies. But I think too that it's just you know, with the proliferation of more modern movies and television shows, especially the ones you mentioned, Pineapple Express and Weeds, what it does is it just brings it a bit more into the culture and showing, especially with that show Weeds, that you know, it's not just degenerate potheads who are using it and growing it. You know, they're less of a criminal element. These are just like suburban moms and dads doing what they can to make a living. And, you know, and if you're in a medical marijuana state or in a permissive state, you can do it above board. You don't have to hide your face behind a bandana. You can actually hold your head high in many of the communities as somebody who is providing a substance that is beneficial to a lot of people in that community. So here in the United States, the polling just continues to go up and up in terms of support for not just medical marijuana laws, which is hovering over 70% nationwide in people in support of medical marijuana laws, but also for legalization overall. Just recently, a couple of weeks ago, there was a poll, national poll out, that showed for the first time that a full 50% of Americans are just tired of this war on marijuana. You know, the war on harder drugs might be more difficult to quantify, but the war on marijuana is a pretty simple one. People are just tired of seeing money wasted and lives, being hit with a pretty severe financial and personal toll for growing and selling something that is extremely benign, especially when compared to some of our legal substances that we have.
This is an interesting book, Greg. It's been good to talk again. Good luck with the book.
Thank you very much. It was great to talk to you, too.
The website for more, bygregcampbell.com. The book is called Pot Inc. Inside Medical Marijuana, America's Most Outlaw Industry. It's published by Sterling. Its author, Greg Campbell, on the line from Fort Collins, Colorado, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.